Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And we're back. So, what to do with the markets, right? I mean, you know, you look at it and you go, "What? It's going to go up? It's going to go down? Well, we'll see." All right, so we're going to dive in here. I'm excited. We've got a returning guest. Morgan Housel is our guest. He is a columnist at The Motley Fool and also The Wall Street Journal. And the website, very clever, clever indeed. The website is fool.com. And you can get a lot more good information about The Motley Fool. And if you've never heard of them, they have newsletters, a lot of investor education. And, you know, they take kind of a different perspective, and it's refreshing. So I always enjoy reading the work of Morgan and others over there who are putting out the articles and all of the educational materials they provide. As I said, he's a columnist. He's also, his work has been featured USA Today, The Huffington Post, and Business Insider. And Morgan is also a two-time winner of the Best in Business Award from the Society of American Business Editors and Writers, and selected by Columbia Journalist Review for the Best Business Writing in 2012. So pleased to have him with us. And I want to jump in here, Morgan. You know, we've had you on the program before, enjoyed having you before, and I'm glad to have you back. And I found your a couple of recent articles you wrote really refreshing. And that's coming from, you know, a financial planning investment guy. I was like, you know, that makes a lot of sense. So I love the way you write, and I'm glad to have you back on the program.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me here, and I really appreciate hearing that, because that's, I think, the goal of any writer, is to try to take something complicated and, without dumbing it down, explain it in a way that makes sense to not only financial advisors like yourself, but lay investors out there who are trying to make sense of the world.
Yeah, that's what Einstein said, right? If you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it yourself.
That's right. Yep.
So that is a nice compliment. Glad you can spend some time with us. And I want to touch on a couple of recent articles you wrote, and they'll make for a nice discussion for our listeners who are listening in here. As we look at the market and where it is, you know, the thing that gets people, I think, anxious is anytime we hit a new high for the market, of course, there's a lot of enthusiasm, but there's also, oh boy, here we go. This is quote unquote another bubble. And I know that you've spent a significant amount of time going back and kind of looking historically about where things have been and what has happened. And, you know, I guess if somebody really, if they think things are not going to be good in the future, they can find plenty of justification, or start with the opinion, then go find the facts to support the opinion. And if they think things are going to be really good in the future, they can do the same. So, but we've got to keep some practical, realistic perspective on all this, don't we?
Yeah, I think it's true that no matter where you are in history, you go back, we have good financial data going back more than a century. And you can go back and look at that data, and at any single point in time, doesn't matter where it is, find a good justification for why the market is about to crash. A good rational argument backed up by evidence and facts that makes a lot of sense. Not crazy conspiracy theories, but
right,
really good, solid reasons for why the market's going to crash. And so that's the first point. The second point is, the market has crashed a lot over the last 100 years.
Right.
And crash is sort of an extreme word, but if you say, you know, 10% pullbacks, 5% pullbacks,
sure,
if you look at the last 100 years, there's been a 10% correction in the S&P 500 roughly every 11 months.
Yeah.
Roughly on average, not exactly at that interval, but on average about every 11 months. So that it's a pretty common feature of the stock market to go through quite a bit of volatility. And I think what investors have to ask themselves is, you know, what are you investing for? If
right,
you are investing for the next 10 or 20 years, and you know that historically markets are going to have several pullbacks, 10% corrections, sometimes 20, 30% corrections or more like we had in 2008, but within that context, you're confident that over very long periods of time, the stock market will increase in value due to the fundamental profits and value creation driven by the businesses that you own, then the volatility in the stock market becomes a lot less meaningful. It becomes something that you deal with rather than something trying that is scary that you should try to avoid. So I think one of the biggest roadblocks that trip up investors over time, why so many investors have a hard time in the stock market, is that they view that normal volatility, run-of-the-mill volatility, as something that they should be feared and avoided.
Mm.
And by taking actions to try to avoid it, they end up hurting themselves significantly worse than they would have if they had just accepted it and endured it as part of a long-term investing plan.
Well, that's well put, Morgan. And that is really, you know, you've nailed a key part of investing and what is necessary before you start talking about what investments or funds or financial vehicles you're going to go into. And that is, what are you investing for? What's the purpose? What are you doing this for? Is this for long-term accumulation? Is this for a short-term parking of the money for a specific period of time, then you're going to take it out? Is it to produce income? What's the purpose? It's interesting. There's so many analogies we could use, but if I'm running over to Lowe's and I've got something that I need to buy, well, I've got the job in mind. You know, if I'm going to cut down a tree, you know, I'm not going to go in and come out with a trash can.
Right. And, you know, I think if, and this is something that I think you would have much more insight than myself as a financial advisor, but sitting down, I think if you really ask people about this, you might find out that, hey, this is money that they're going to need next year.
Right.
So a lot of the reason that they are really concerned about the stock market pullback is because they need this money to pay their bills next year.
Right,
or to send to school next year. And therefore, the answer to that then becomes, then this money probably shouldn't be in the stock market.
Thank you.
The stock market is inherently a long-term game.
Yep.
And if it's money that you are going to need in the short run, then there are other vehicles to invest it in, cash and bonds. Of course, the downside of that is, especially today, you're not going to earn much income from cash and bonds. But that's the reality that I think has to be accepted, rather than putting short-term money in stocks and hoping for the best, that we're not going to have any sort of volatility between now and the time you need it. Because the market neither knows nor cares about your short-term goals. And it's not going to treat you kindly most of the time.
That's good. That's a quotable, Morgan. The market neither knows nor cares about your short-term goals for your money you put in it. Yeah, it's so true. And so many people would benefit from that wisdom, because first thing I ask somebody when we sit down and talk about investing, I'm like, okay, before we get started here, let's talk about any upcoming expenses, expenditures, things you're planning to do the next year, 2 years, 3 years. And invariably, we're remodeling the kitchen, we're buying a car, we're going on a trip, we've got this, we've got that. I said, okay, how much cash do you have on hand? Well, we've got this much. And almost always I'm like, okay, well, we also need an emergency fund. So very often we've got to set aside money, and we should do this. So thank you for backing me up on this, Morgan. We should set that money aside before we start talking about how to invest the rest of it. And then my next point I go to, and I know you can appreciate this, is, how much income do we need? I mean, and so, you know, there's so many different pieces of this, but the market neither knows nor cares. Thank you, Morgan.
Yeah, you know, I think what a lot of this comes down to, both for investing and income within your job, is that one of the most important financial traits that you can have, that you need to insert into your own life, is room for error. If you have a room for error in your portfolio where you can accept, hey, if the market goes up 20% this year, that's great. But if it goes down 20%, that's okay too, because I don't need this money this year. Now you have room for error. You have options in your life. And that's really important too, I think, especially for retirees, to have multiple sources of income.
Thank you.
That's some income from dividends and some income from Social Security. The more different sources you have, the more room for error you have for one of those things going wrong. Because almost at any time in the economy, no matter whether the economy is booming or busting, something is probably not going to be going right. You know, right now, the stock market has been doing well for several years, but the bond market, in terms of current income, is pretty pathetic.
Right.
So something is always going to be going wrong, and the more sources you have, the more diversification you have, the better off you're going to be.
Well put. Well, I'm going to see if I can match you on a quotable here. So if you are looking for, you know, a way to position yourself, and you're just like, okay, let's figure out how to invest the money, and you start talking about that, then I think that you get to a point where you have to figure out where to put the money and where it needs to go. And so we'll work on that. I tell you what, let's grab a break. Morgan House is our guest today, columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal. We're going to dig a little deeper into good decision-making when it comes to your investments. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
The Rice & Rose Law Firm is celebrating 30 years of service in Volusia and Flagler counties. I'm Paul Rice, and I'm board certified in divorce and family law. I specialize in representing divorcing spouses over the age of 50. Spouses getting divorced in their 50s, 60s, and 70s confront far different challenges than younger people. If you have questions about alimony, division of retirement or investment accounts, Social Security, health insurance, or anything else, you can contact me in our Daytona Beach office at 257-1222 or visit my website at ricerosedlaw.com.
What if in the time it takes you to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? Well, if you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. It's as simple as that. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? And there's no cost or obligation to meet with David. All you need to do is simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com for more information.
All right, welcome back. Morgan Housel, our guest today, columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal. Fool.com is a website, a lot of great information, including Morgan's recent articles. I kind of figured out that quotable for you on the break there, Morgan, that when you talked about making room for errors, I thought to myself, you know, really, not only error, but what you're really doing is making room for reality of outcomes.
That's right.
Because you know, you could have the market, you could have the economy, all the reports are wonderful. Everything's rosy. Labor market, interest rates, I mean, just everything. Housing, everything is wonderful. And the stock market can still drop 20%.
And the reverse is true, too. You know, 2009, the stock market went up almost 30%. An incredible year for the stock market. The economy was in shambles by any measurement.
Right.
Unemployment, GDP, income growth. The economy was a mess. The stock market went up 30%.
Right.
So you have these big disconnects just because, of course, the market is looking ahead at what is the next 5 years going to be going to look like, whereas
yeah.
the economic data that we hear today is not only current, but backward-looking
exactly.
over the previous quarter or the previous 6 months.
This doesn't make sense, guys. The market thinks that things are going to be better in the future, and right now the last 3 months have been bad. Well, that's the way it works.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
well,
reality.
You know, and that forces us to then have to sometimes make decisions, and I really love your article about this back from August 12th, Always Consider Your Alternatives. This forces us then to make decisions sometimes that aren't real pleasant, aren't real fun, and maybe don't seem like the best decision, but it is still better than the alternative.
Yeah, you know, so the most common argument against buy and hold investing is that there was a period from the 1960s to the 1980s where the S&P 500 adjusted for inflation went nowhere. You had 20 years where you did not make any money after inflation. Your wealth just flatlined. Well, actually, flatlined is a misnomer because there were huge booms and busts in there. But from start to finish, you made no money over 20 years. And people use this as an example to say, look, buy and hold doesn't work. You can't do it because this one time. And there are actually several occurrences over long-term history where you go 15, 20 years without making money. The problem with that argument that I talked about in this article is that if you weren't invested in stocks during that period, you had to do something else with your money.
Right.
And for most people, there are really three options for your money. It's stocks, bonds, and cash. And if you look at what bonds and cash did during that same 20-year period adjusted for inflation, it was considerably worse than stocks. So in the stock market, your money was roughly flat from, I think, 1964 to 1984. It was about flat after inflation. If you own 10-year treasury bonds during that period, you lost a fifth of your money after inflation. So if you think the return in the stock market was bad, you should have seen the most common alternative. It was significantly worse.
Yeah.
And you know, there are rebuttals to that. You could say, well, you could have owned gold or oil or all these assets that did well. But I think that's a lot of hindsight bias looking back and assuming that you could have timed those trades perfectly. It might seem obvious in hindsight that, you should have owned gold in the 70s and 80s, but, you know, there's... things always make perfect sense in hindsight. It's not really a forward-looking strategy that you can count on next time, which is what's important when we're looking at our investments.
Exactly. Well, and you beat me to it. I was going to say, well, of course, gold, you know. And the interesting thing to me, Morgan, is anytime somebody does exactly what you're describing, it's usually, when I say somebody, I mean somebody that is, you know, talking about these statistics and they're citing how buy and hold doesn't work. Therefore, it's always followed by, therefore, you should be doing this alternative, which is buy gold or buy something else. There's always a pitch that follows the deconstruction of whatever it is that is often widely accepted. Like, well, that's all well and good, but if you had only followed our strategy, then you could have done this and that.
And, you know, I think what's difficult about that is that there are a lot of periods, including, say, 2009 to 2012, when gold did extraordinarily well, and periods in the 70s and 80s where gold did extraordinarily well. The problem with that from an investing planning point of view is that you really need to come up with a strategy that's going to work consistently somewhat reliably for 20 or 30 or 40 years. And that's where when you get into, you know, owning gold or some other alternative in a big major way in your portfolio rather than just some feature of diversification, is that you can't rely on gold working for the 30 or 40 years as a function of your mm-hmm. portfolio. It might work for 2 years here and then have a stretch of 20 years where it doesn't work, which is what happened in the 90s and early 2000s.
Right.
It's just not something that you can count on reliably. And I think if you're going to look at the really long-term history of investments, what does work reliably, the most reliably, is a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds and cash, and maybe, you know, some commodities and real estate in there as well. It's not, I have nothing against gold per se. I just get skeptical when people own it in a major way in their portfolio rather than some sort of subset of diversification.
I agree. And there's nothing wrong with missing out on the peaks and the valleys. I mean, you know, there's diversification sometimes means you have to say you're sorry. I mean, but that's okay because it just trying to go all in. The risk of going all in on something like gold is you can really suffer some enormous damage if we have a major correction with some of these focused bets that people make because they feel like they've got the some sort of special formula, and it's just such a dangerous game.
Yeah, you know, the times in world history when gold may have looked like it was absolutely the best thing to do were times that were followed by geopolitical events that were so severe that your assets and your retirement portfolio were the least of your concerns.
Oh yeah,
so
that's
to speak.
True.
If you were, if you were a family in Europe in the 1930s and 1940s,
right?
Even if you were an investor in the United States in the 1930s, there's a period where it was effectively not legal to own gold and it was confiscated.
Right.
So you know the periods where you look back, you know, gold in theory should do extremely well during periods of heavy turmoil, but a lot of times that turmoil gets so heavy that what assets you own is really not. Not your biggest concern.
That's a good point. That's a very good point, Morgan. I'm glad you're here to help us understand and kind of put all this in a better perspective. You're just joining us. Morgan Hauser is our guest today, columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal. Fool.com is a website, and we've got more to dig into, and I've been looking forward to this. Got to get to the things I'm pretty sure about. Morgan wrote about that in August as well, and I love it. I'm going to keep this one in my desk drawer, Morgan. So let's grab a break. We'll come back and talk some more. Stay right there.
Having a place to go after school will make you a better student. Having an outlet to express yourself will make you a better artist. Having something to do together will make you a better family. At The Y, we're helping build better friends, listeners, writers, swimmers, scientists, and musicians, one chance at a time. Get the gift of opportunity. Support The Y.
For more information on what your Y does and how you can help, visit vfymca.org/give.
The Y. For a better us.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Drake. My staff and I have enjoyed delivering excellent, lasting dental care to countless patients for many years. We are a modern dental practice offering a full range of services, including cosmetic, implant, Invisalign, and general dentistry. Additionally, I am one of only a few dentists licensed to perform IV sedation, sleep dentistry to help those of you who are anxious. My belief and commitment is to deliver outstanding dental care and positive patient experiences. We look forward to serving you. If you have a dental question or concern, don't hesitate to call us at 386-673-1611 or visit AtlanticDentists.com.
Hi, this is David Holland. I've been going to Dr. Drake's office for over 20 years. I trust them, and you can too.
Hi, this is Mike Peerless, NMLS number 1073735, Reverse Mortgage Director for Holland Mortgage Services, a subsidiary of Holland Financial. It used to be that people considered a reverse mortgage as a loan of last resort. In fact, our company's founder and host of this program, David Holland, was a skeptic himself. However, after many client requests, David investigated this product thoroughly and decided that a reverse mortgage could fit into one's overall financial plan. Holland Mortgage Services is a licensed Florida broker, and we can help you refinance your existing mortgage and stop making ongoing monthly mortgage payments. However, you are still responsible for payment of property taxes, homeowners insurance, and HOA fees. You can also tap your home's equity to pay off credit cards or put cash in the bank. Call 386-671-7526 today for a free evaluation. Sometimes, to move forward, you need to go reverse. That number again is 386-671-7526. Holland Mortgage Services, NMLS number 1432962.
And we're back. Morgan Housel, our guest today, columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal. Fool.com. Check it out. A lot of great work over there. And I wasn't kidding, Morgan. I'm going to keep this one in my desk drawer. Things I'm pretty sure about, because you just hit so many big things that are, and again, you put it, you achieved the Einstein threshold, and you take some of these big things and kind of put it into pretty clear, simple explanations. And I'll prime the pump here with I think what is my favorite, and that is that recessions and bear markets are very easy to predict, except for the timing, cause, magnitude, duration, location, and policy response.
Yeah, I think if you look at the history of forecasters, I think that's the only conclusion that you can come to.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's an indictment against forecasters. It's not that they're not smart enough, or they don't have the talent, or looking at the wrong information, or they don't have enough education. I just think what causes recessions are not things that anybody can reliably measure. Because the number one, there are really 2 points. One is, I think the cause of recessions tend to be things that nobody can necessarily predict. Because there are changes in policy that are inherently just the result of a decision that a group of policymakers made that was maybe influenced by what mood they were in that day.
Yeah.
Things that really can't be predicted, or changes in society's general mood, swings from optimism to pessimism that can't be predicted. And if you just put it in the simple terms of saying, what mood are people going to be in May 2022?
Right.
Say, well, that's an absurd question.
Right.
Nobody, if you put it that way, you can say nobody can answer that. There's no way you could know. But that's what people are trying to do when they predict, say, are we going to have a recession in the next 7 years? Or what is the stock market going to do over the next 10 years? That's implicitly what the question is trying to answer. But if you put it in that term, it becomes pretty silly.
So
the history of trying to predict recessions is pretty abysmal, and I think it'll always be abysmal, no matter how smart or how much data we have. It's always going to be something that I think sneaks up on us, but we want to pretend it's something more like the weather.
Yeah.
That if we have enough data and enough models and fast enough computers, we can really predict it with precision, and I don't think it's ever going to be like that.
Yeah, it sounds like Stuart Smalley from SNL, doggone it, I'm smart enough, people like me, it occurs to me that, Morgan, that our world is increasingly complex. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, it makes it awfully difficult to predict. I mean, you had in one of your other articles, I'll quote you on that one as well, that you talked about, where is it, you have 150 million workers in the country supporting over 300 million people, 29 million businesses, 80% of which will fail in the first 3 years, 11,000 lobbyists, 1.2 million lawyers, 70,000 pages of tax code, and 500,000 annual patent applications. That's a lot of complexity.
It's a lot of complexity, but then as analysts or economists, we try to take that complexity and distill it down to a formula,
right,
or a talking point, or
right,
a forecast.
Right. Right.
It's just something that is just so mind-bogglingly complex, and it just leads to a lot of misbehavior and false.
It's a lot of heartache.
Beliefs in forecasts over time that send a lot of investors astray.
Yeah, it's a lot of heartache. That was going to be my point. And, there is, of course, the law of probability, that with enough observations, you eventually will get the observation you're looking for. So if you have all these would-be prognosticators and seers out there who make all these various forecasts, every now and then, one of them will be right because, if you go to the track enough times and you pick, I'm going to pick, dog number four, eventually dog number four is going to be right. So then that gives credence then to this, this person is a predictor, and, let's listen to what he has to say or she has to say. And, it's just I don't know what to call it. It's just a kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, or I don't know, something not good.
Yeah, you know, that happened a lot in 2008, where there were a handful of people that, in hindsight, really looked like they predicted this one. They nailed this on the head. I'm not going to name names, but I think people know, roughly who this is. People who were screaming in 2006,
sure.
2007, the economy is going to collapse.
Right.
There's, stand by, this is going to be a big one. And
right.
indeed, that's what happened. And then
right.
they were kind of crowned as geniuses and market seers. And they were paraded on TV as so-and-so predicted the financial crisis. But I think the most important point in almost all of those stories that's left out is that those were people who were predicting doom since, in some cases, the 1970s. It's just been consistently, year after year, since the Carter administration,
right.
just been predicting year after year after year, the economy is going to collapse, the stock market's going to collapse, real estate's going to collapse. And then when it finally happened in 2008, nobody looked at that past 30-year track record. They just looked at this one instance in which they were right. And I think
yeah.
that I think is the most dangerous type of pundit to listen to, because it really accentuates the false credibility, false intelligence that they have.
Well, and it makes for...
That gets dangerous.
Yeah, it is dangerous, and it does, but of course it feeds into, we have to have something to talk about, Morgan, on television, in the paper, on the internet, and it feeds into that. And so let me go on the record here, and you can be my witness, Morgan. I'm going to say that the stock market's going to drop 10% sometime in the next, say, 5 to 10 years.
This point I think is really important to make. There is a difference between saying... we're likely to have two recessions over the next 15 years versus saying we're likely to have a recession in January 2019.
Right.
Those are two very different things.
Right.
And the first, I'm totally supportive of the idea that we can and should look at very broad trends in history and extrapolate them in a very rough, imprecise way into the future. So history tells us that we have recessions in fairly regular common intervals.
Yeah,
exactly. We have bear markets pretty frequently. They're a normal function of society. And we should expect that in the future as well, that we're going to have fairly frequent recessions, fairly frequent bear markets. Once you start trying to get precise, though, and saying we're going to have a bear market this year, we're going to have a recession next year, and here's what you should do with your money because of that.
Exactly.
That precision is, I think, the danger in making forecasts. There's no danger, I don't think, in accepting that the future is going to be volatile and we're going to have recessions. I get so skeptical at the false precision that people try to attach to it, though.
Perfect. Morgan Housel, ladies and gentlemen, columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal, fool.com. Morgan, love having you on again. We'll do it again. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.